And here are the futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to another Future Tuesday. Beautiful day today in Santa Cruz. Sunny skies. Mrs. Future is in a Christmassy mood.
Christmas in Santa Cruz. Let me tell you, we need some new traditions here. There are no reindeer. There's no cold red noses anywhere.
What are we ever going to do without
no
snow?
There's no icicles in the trees. It's not cold. It's kind of nice. I mean, I wouldn't be out there in a bikini sunbathing, but it's really pleasant.
Maybe we should team up with the Australians.
Yeah.
Summertime coming in there.
What are you saying?
I mean, I'm saying that, you know, we have such nice weather this time of year. We might as well be in Australia in terms of nice weather.
Why do we need to go there?
We don't.
We're here.
We're here. I know. I'm saying the traditions, though. We could borrow from the traditions. That might be, well, or maybe Santa Claus was somebody that traveled in the summer.
Yeah, I think we need, instead of Santa Claus, you know, a guy in a big heavy coat with a red nose, I think what we need is surfer claws, which,
yeah, surfer's good.
Yeah.
The desert's
good. Let's see some red O'Neill swimsuits out there, some red O'Neill wetsuits, and maybe some folks with antlers as they...
Surfer Santas, huh?
Yeah,
there's a ring to it.
They ride the curl.
Yeah. So, welcome everyone to the show this week. We got a lot of interesting space stories, especially for the first time.
Yeah, it's cold out there.
Yeah, it is. No, it's cold and hot in space. Hot runs hot and cold. Space runs hot and cold.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I always think of it as so cold.
Whether you're absorbing solar radiation or not.
Uh-huh. I guess it depends on how far you are from the nearest heat source.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can go both ways in space. So in terms of cold, though, China's Chang 4 mission to the dark side of the moon will get super cold. I've often wondered how they expect their probe to survive the cold temperatures there.
Oh, boy. So China's going to the dark side, huh? Dark side of the moon. They've launched already, right?
Yes, they have.
And what's the time?
They call it the far side, not the dark side.
The far side. Yes, that sounds so much more positive. The far side of the moon.
Far side.
That used to be my favorite comic strip was The Far Side.
Gary Larson?
Yeah,
I like that too.
Anyway, okay, so the far side of the moon.
Yes, they launched a rocket last Friday. It is on its way to the moon. Exactly when it sets down on the dark side, it's hard to say. They're kind of tight-lipped about it, but we expect it to be early January.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, one good reason to check out this article is because of the picture at the beginning of the article.
It shows you the
really
moon in relation to the Earth.
Yes, it's a picture that was taken by NASA's Deep Space Climate Observatory satellite, and it is a really great picture of the dark side of the moon with the Earth in the background, which I've never seen them juxtaposed like this before.
You can see the relative size of the two heavenly bodies there.
Yeah. Right.
Well, the Chang 4 has two main parts. It's got the lander, which weighs about 2,400 pounds on Earth, and a 300-pound rover. Now, if you compare that to, say, our rover on Mars, or the Opportunity, the one that we're waiting to hear from that got lost in the dust storm, it weighs 400 pounds.
Ooh.
And their rover weighs 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the Curiosity rover that is really active on Mars right now is 2,000 pounds.
Oh.
So that compares to their lander, which is 2,400 pounds.
Okay.
But our rover roves, or their lander lands and sends out a rover. So the spacecraft is largely a clone of their Chang 3, which landed on the moon back in 2013. And this one was originally built as a backup, and they retrofitted it with different instruments and sent it out there. Pretty efficient, it seems to me. So they have different location also for this one. It's going to land in the 110-mile-wide Van Karman crater on the far side of the moon. It's tidally locked from us. Yeah, it's the Van Karman crater. It's a very, very big crater at the bottom. Mm-hmm. It's within an area known as the South Pole, or Aitken Basin. 1,600-mile-wide crater at the bottom of the moon.
Wow.
Now, what's unique about it is that it has different geology. Interesting mineralogy.
You mean compared to everything outside the crater?
From other locations.
Okay.
We've checked out, yeah.
What's different about it?
It reflects materials from an impact that created the basin. It brought up the interior components of the
Oh, I see. Moon. That impact was more than just a flesh wound for the moon.
Yeah, it sort of revealed what's underneath the surface layer of the moon.
Oh.
So we're kind of curious about that.
A little bit of the interior leaked out.
Yeah. And also what's interesting is that the far side is way more mountainous than the side that faces us.
Hmm.
And we don't know why exactly.
Well, that's a very interesting thing to ponder.
Why is mountains on one side and not on the other?
Maybe because they're heavier. And so with gravity sucking the planet towards the center, maybe somehow we're sucking the skinny side and the fat sides being forced further away from the
That's choice A, only choice. Is that, is that why the non-mountainous side faces the Earth all the time?
Yeah, well, it's tidally locked, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
So only one side can face the Earth.
That's
all
right.
The time.
All the time.
And gravity is doing the work.
Yes. Oh, just to make it more complicated for you, the dark side of the moon, or the far side of the moon, it's not officially called the dark side because it actually does get light.
That's right.
Yes,
that's
it
right. When we're seeing the dark side of the moon, the part we usually see...
When we're seeing our side in the dark.
For us, that's the full moon. It just happens to be dark. The lights are out.
The new moon, you mean?
Yeah, during the new moon, we still have the same side of the moon facing up, but
that's
the lights are out.
Yes, and it's
And the other side is lit up.
That's where it's lit up. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I think you got it, Mrs. Future.
Yeah, I think so, too. Had to think.
What's interesting here is that the Chinese are collaborating with Germany, the University of Germany, Kiel University in Germany, and the Swedish Institute of Space Physics in providing some of the instrumentation on board. And these instruments will probe the structure of the rocks that it lands on and study the effects of solar wind as it's hitting the surface of
man. Boy, so space used to just study rocks, and now they're moving into atmosphere.
Atmosphere, and also radio astronomy. Because it's the far side of the moon, it blocks all electromagnetic radiation coming from the Earth.
Oh, really?
So it gives you a electromagnetically free Milky Way to look at.
Wow.
You're able to see the stars really clearly without electromagnetic interference from our civilizations.
So it's kind of like the moon functions as a noise cancellation satellite.
It blocks it. Yeah, it's a very nice Faraday cage. Blocks out all that electromagnetic radiation.
Oh, so you'd think we'd want to set up some great telescopes there.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be a good place to study that sort of thing. Also, there's the issue of communication. Because it's on the other side of the moon, you can't exactly communicate very well because you don't have line of sight.
So we'll just use the internet.
Yeah, right. That's it. So the Chinese have put a couple of communication satellites in orbit around the moon to relay the signal.
Oh, I see. Do we call that lunar synchronous orbits?
Lunar synchronicities? You tell me, Mrs. Future. Lunar synchronicity. It sounds very mysterious.
We'll be back. Dr. Future Show.
Yes, I'm glad I'm here and not on the far side of the moon.
Oh, I'm glad you're here too, honey. It would be very hard to snuggle up on that side of the moon for sure.
A little cold for me.
Yeah, me too, even with you.
Nonetheless, you did want to mention a couple other things, I believe.
Yeah, I just love this article. It's from the New York Times. We're still talking about the Chinese mission to the far side of the moon, and the way that this article wraps up is full of a lot of really interesting trivia, which we'll track down in future shows. So for one thing, they point out that next year the Indian government is planning to launch a mission that's called the Chandrayaan 2, which includes an orbiter, a lander, and a rover. The next scintillating bit of data is that there is a Google Lunar X Prize winner, or at least a finalist, the Israeli team called Space IL. I'm not sure how they say that. Space IL. I would not want to name a mission Space Ill, but that's what it looks like the Israeli team is called. And it looks like they are planning to send a robotic lander to the moon early next year. Let's see, a few other things NASA.
So we're going to have an Israeli lander, is that what you're saying? So an Israeli, a Chinese lander, and an Indian.
Right.
And meet on the dark side of the moon. It sounds like the beginning of a joke.
Or a horror movie. So some very interesting other insights. First of all, federal law limits any NASA interaction with the Chinese when it comes to
So NASA can't collaborate with the Chinese lander.
Apparently not. And who knows when that was put into place. I used to think of them as our great allies, but I guess not. At least we have to overcome a lot of the distrust between our two countries.
It's kind of a love-hate relationship, if you ever saw one.
Some people love to hate, for sure.
Well,
some people
too.
Really go out of their way. And I myself am into the one world consciousness. We should all find a way to create peace on Earth together.
Well, this time of year especially.
Especially, right.
Especially if you want Santa to visit.
That's right. Are you naughty or nice? Nevertheless, even though NASA is not going to be doing anything with China in space officially anytime soon, we do have the NASA administrator, Jim Bridenstine, praising the Chinese and their Chang'e 4 mission.
Well, yeah, the scientists don't necessarily share these political sensibilities.
Absolutely. You know? Scientists respect knowledge, expertise, wisdom, people achieving things that are difficult to achieve. So let's hear it for international cooperation and respect. And then the last thing I wanted to point out is that NASA did announce last week that there are 9 companies competing for robotic missions to carry science experiments to the moon. And the first of these could go as early as 2019, but most of them say they will not be ready until 2021.
Those are like the Google X Prize for landing a lander on the moon, and you're getting $20 million if you do something.
No, the $20 million prize has expired.
Oh.
So just some of the finalists who...
Well, there's people that did compete for that.
They did. So they qualified.
They just don't want to give it up because they didn't get the 20 mil.
They didn't get it in time.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course, 20 million on space launch is nothing.
I know. It's a drop in the bucket. It's a science experiment.
It's the first stage of the rocket.
Right. Well, so yeah, 9 companies are going to try and send robots to the moon in the next couple years.
Right.
So.
Right. Okay.
Staying abreast of the moon.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you, Mrs. Future, for updating us on lunar explorations.
I love that you got your eye on the sky. It's so fascinating.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I mean, we're looking out from our little pale blue dot into the infinite universe. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So what else do we see? We move a little over to Mars. What's going on over there?
Oh, yeah.
Our Mars Rover Opportunity team at NASA are still holding on to a sliver of hope for communications with our lost rover,
Opie. Long lost rover, Opie.
Ever since a big sandstorm covered her up last May, we haven't heard from her.
Here she is. She was going strong at age 14, and then all of a sudden, year-long Martian dust storm took her out.
Yeah.
But we haven't given up hope.
And it was planetary-wide dust storm, so it was huge.
There was no escape. There was no place to hide.
But why is there hope now, you might ask?
Why is there hope now?
Because it's getting to be windy season where Opie is living on Mars.
Oh, that wasn't so good for Opie last year.
Well, that was sandstorm season.
I beg your pardon.
Windy is not so much wind.
I see. It doesn't kick up the dust, huh?
No, but it might be enough. It just might be enough to clean off those solar panels.
Oh, let's hope.
We can, maybe get some juice.
Okay,
and
Opie.
That's what we're hoping.
I hope we get some nice wind blasting on your solar panels.
Hope for Opie. And if you want to check these stories out for yourself, just go to our links page, drfutureshow.com/links.
All right. So they're going to keep trying to communicate with Opie through January and see if they can't revive the Martian lander.
Yeah, the Martian lander. And meanwhile, another interesting thing is that we had a craft that landed just last month, and it picked up some interesting sounds. You probably heard them on the news. They were all over the news this last
Are you going to try and play these sounds on the radio?
Let's see. Casio Guest Land.
Wait, if you want to do that, you know I have to get ready.
Oh, you do? Okay.
We have to get the source and we have to get the volume and all that stuff.
Yeah, do you think we should try to get this on the air? You probably heard it, but let's give it a shot, shall we?
I am ready. If it can be heard, I can play it. Tell me when you're ready.
I'm going to listen to the Martian Wind. The Martian Wind song. Okay.
You're all plugged in?
Yeah.
All right, we're listening. We're listening for Martian Wind.
Here we go.
Guess what, folks?
Okay.
That was Dr. Future's impression of the winds on Mars.
Well, I heard them before. But they say they sounded unworldly. It still sounded kind of worldly to me. Mm-hmm. If it was unworldly, what would an unworldly wind sound like?
I don't know.
Let's see. Something like that. The Voyager 2, one of our original spacecraft to explore the solar system, the Carl Sagan days of the 1970s, mm-hmm. has just reached a milestone.
Mm-hmm. Voyager 2.
Yes. It left the heliosphere last month.
So this is not V'ger. This is not the famous Voyager from the Star Trek movie.
Yeah, well,
who
it could
went
be,
and
actually.
Became sentient.
Yeah, there was Voyager 1 and 2.
This is Voyager 2.
Yeah, Voyager 1 and 2 were launched the same time period, basically.
1970s. You mean the same decade.
77. No, I think within 6 months of each other.
Oh, yeah.
Something mm-hmm. like that. And Voyager 2 has exited the heliosphere, which is this plasma bubble created by the sun that encompasses most of the solar system.
I see. The heliosphere.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like a bubble, like a membrane.
That's one of the big space entities, the heliosphere.
That's right. This one, we actually had an instrument on board that measured the solar noise, the solar wind, and it detected it going to zero.
Really?
So passing through the barrier.
So here we were tooling along on the outer heliosphere, feeling that solar wind at our back. And then, all of a sudden, nada. Dead in the space waters.
That's right. And it happened last month. I think November 5th is how they're pegging it right now.
Mm.
It's no longer in the heliosphere. Now, that doesn't mean it's out of the solar system. Okay?
Right.
The solar system is a bigger thing than that.
It's just as far as the sun can send the solar wind.
Yeah. It's one of the boundary lanes. But beyond that, there's what they call the Oort cloud.
The Oort cloud.
And this surrounds the entire solar system it's like another bubble, but it's a bubble of rocks. It's like a whole, like an asteroid belt in 3D.
It could be all of that missing dark matter that the physicists are wondering where is it to explain physics.
Well, no, it's rocks. It's probably
dark rocks, though, because you can't see them because there's nothing lighting them.
Pretty much, but they're there. And they probably protect us from stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, why would you have a rock boundary?
I suppose if you were under attack from another planetary system, you'd want some rocks out there to make it difficult.
Chances are it wasn't designed for any human reason. It was probably there, left over from the creation of the solar system.
Okay.
But who really knows? Maybe it's where the intelligence lies.
Could be.
Something to think about. The Oort cloud, the outer range, that's the next stop for the Voyagers.
It's fascinating, though, to realize that for the first time, we have measurements of the edge of the heliosphere. Before then, we didn't really have
data. That's right. It's a real membrane. It's a real...
Fascinating. At least we have one tiny thread that measured it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well...
The Voyager 1 craft, by the way, had lost the instrument that could do that. It died in 1980. So we were lucky to have the instrument that could do this and measure the sun and see it go away.
All right. Thank you, Voyager 2. We'll be right back on Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned. It's a very, very bad world. Bad world.
welcome back to the show. And that background supposedly is the sound of Mars.
Problem is you have to be really close to Mars to hear it. We're just too far away. And we're inside of a soundproof room. So it's just not happening, folks. We did our best.
Yeah. Well, if you listen to the podcast version, it'll probably be there.
Yeah. If you're listening on the podcast, the delayed version of the show, you'll get the live sound.
That's actually where
we'll record it and put it there for you.
That's right. And that's actually where Dr. Future is going to be living more and more as we go on into the future.
In the podcast?
It'll be into more of the internet realms because we're a very visual show. So we want to show a lot of video and demonstration of 3D graphics and animations of what we're talking about.
Well, we're going to conquer the future one sense at a time.
Yeah,
and we've been working on audio and we're heading towards
8 years
video.
Now. 8 years on the show. And yet,
it was a good place to start.
And yet Mrs. Future and I actually had our start more in video.
That's true.
And we even got our show on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Yeah,
you know, with
Billy
some
Idol. Help with the digital media band.
So we started nationally and went locally.
That's right. We're collapsing into the VR realms.
Because it all comes down to the moment, folks, and here and now, and with the people you love.
That's right. That's right. The future is as big as you want it to be, but it starts right now.
Right here. And also at Honda, NASA, and Caltech, because those places have a team that have brought a new battery or are bringing a new battery into existence. They could change everything.
Do tell. What do you know about new batteries?
Well, I do know that most of our batteries of any consequence today are lithium batteries, mm-hmm. lithium ion especially.
Mm-hmm.
And lithium is a good element for making batteries, but it's not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that fluoride... Remember fluoride? It gets a really bad name for water supplies and
hard to forget
teeth and stuff like that. Well, fluoride is trying to repair its tarnished image by showing up to be the most amazing element to use in making batteries.
Really?
It's the most electronegative element in the periodic table. In fact, fluoride batteries are capable of 10 times more energy density than a lithium battery.
Hmm.
Now imagine if we could have automobiles that instead of 250 miles, it's 2,500 miles.
Wow.
For a charge. Wouldn't that be something?
It sure would.
Well, fluoride batteries have that promise. The big issue with them has been that in order for them to act as batteries, they like it hot. They like it to be at around 150 degrees Celsius or 300 degrees Fahrenheit to do their thing.
That sounds like pretty hard to hold on to that flashlight.
It's a really tough problem. You know, how do you take something that usually happens at high temperatures to room temperature?
Mm-hmm.
And so a joint research team from Honda, NASA, and Caltech solved the problem. They did it by creating this new liquid electrolyte that lets fluoride dissolve at room temperature.
Hmm. Okay.
It's called BTFE.
Mm-hmm.
BTFE. Okay, so they have a prototype battery that consists of fluorine with copper and something called lanthanum.
Lanthanum.
Yeah.
Hmm, okay. So you use fluoride and lanthanum and you get electricity and copper. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And according to Honda, it's much more environmentally friendly.
Than lithium.
Yes.
Okay. Because you don't have to dig as much to get it. We've got a lot of fluoride out there just wondering what to do with it. May as well put it inside of the electric cars.
You might as well.
Ooh, but that could be really bad if there was an accident. Can you imagine?
Fluoride?
Being in a car that catches fire and it's all fluoride.
Yeah,
that could be.
Probably not even good for your teeth.
Yeah, that's the least of your problems, I'd say.
Yes.
The other thing that I'm curious about, I just looked up on the table of elements just to compare the size of lithium and fluoride.
Yes.
Because, you know, battery weight is already a big, huge issue, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It turns out that fluoride is 3 times bigger than lithium. It's 3 times heavier at the elemental level.
So it's a little heavier battery. But if it has 10 times the capacity, Well, you consider that we kind of started with lead acid batteries. Look how heavy those are.
Talk about heavy.
Way heavier.
Lead is way down the list there.
Compare that with lead and you'll get, you know.
Oh, yeah. Lead is about 100 times heavier.
There you go. So it's a lot.
Not really 100, but close.
A lot lighter than lead.
Yeah. It's in the same row of the periodic table. Fluorine and lithium are both in the second row of the periodic table. So they're pretty light. They're in the first ring.
Good.
The atom.
Well, you know, we don't know if this is going to pan out all the way to actual pragmatic batteries. We do know that it seems to look promising in the lab. And now, can they translate that lab process into something that's practical and affordable? If they can do that, then we have a battery that has way more capacity.
Okay.
So that's why it's a future story.
I'm all for it.
But the lab results are really good. They do have the liquid that allows this reaction for creating electricity to exist at room temperature.
Right. Well, I think the fact that it could be used more efficiently is a plus, but the fact that it's such a potentially toxic chemical means we got to keep our eyes open, be aware of the threat. Hey, we have got a caller. Would you like to say hi to Daddy Bird?
Yeah, let's say hi to Daddy Bird.
Hello, Daddy Bird. You got something to say about lanthanum?
Yeah.
Lanthanum?
I was going to call about that.
Okay.
Because that's called a heavy element, and they use that, and they use fluoride, and they use tungsten and some other elements. They put it in optical glass to cause the glass structure to change. It keeps the lens sharper. Kodak developed it during World War II with the thorium. And their lenses, they have one of them. They're radioactive. The back elements, you put them in Geiger counter and it goes
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, boy. Efficient radioactive batteries. Now, that's a future we can line up behind.
It turns your teeth green, real bright green. So night.
Oh, back to the fluoride element, huh?
Yeah. Well, fluoride was mostly used by the Japanese. They didn't use thorium. But there was a missile that was developed in the middle 50s called a Bomark, and it had a magnesium alloy frame. And they put thorium in it, and they didn't know it, but it was in a museum down in White Sands Proving Grounds, and it was radioactive, too, and they had to take it away. Somebody came out of the Geiger counter, and it jiggled a little bit. I understand that some of those rare elements are basically found mostly in China.
Ah, back to the rare
element
issue.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Issue,
yeah, it's number 57. Lanthanum is soft, ductile, silvery white metal that tarnishes rapidly when exposed to air, and soft enough to be cut with a knife.
Sounds like something you want to stay away. I know that when they say that, I have one lens that's a big aerial surveillance lens that went on a U-2 and some other planes, and the optics, and I bought it over the internet. This guy that's an expert and supposed to know about it, he says, well, you shouldn't stay real close to it. And he used the example, I wouldn't put it under my bed to sleep. So you have to keep it in the...
I suspect in the batteries, they'll probably be in very low amounts, and it's certainly worth paying attention to its potential hazards.
Yeah, well, the other thing, not just the lanthanums, but also fluorine, like chlorine, is in the column of the periodic table that is like the most explosive when mixed with things like water.
I know, but what price power, I ask you, what price power? You got to have some risks here to create this kind of power.
Oh, gosh.
My lens, it'll turn over like 40 years, it'll turn yellow and then it turns brown.
Oh.
So it's hard for the light to come through it. So the way you fix it is you take it outside and you let the sun shine through it, and you put a aluminum foil on the ground, and it bounces back and forth. And after a couple of days, 8 hours a day, it clears up, and it's not yellow, and it's not brown. It's just normal, and then it takes a while to do that.
But why do we want to do that?
Well, with me, it just keeps me occupied. I don't know about why you want to.
I knew there was a good reason.
I see. It's your form of meditation.
But there's several people on the internet that say, they'll have radioactive camera lens. I haven't done that.
Is there some good reason to do that? Do we want radioactive camera lenses, space?
The lenses, if you either put them in the coating or in the glass, there's two ways to do it. Japanese usually use it as lens coating. And Kodak, when they had their plant back in Rochester, they put it in the glass. It will correct aberrations in the lens after it's ground and polished that you can't get any other way.
Oh, so it kind of melts the plasma and gives you a smoother surface?
No, the surface is the same, but what it does is it keeps, like if you take a picture of a grid, like a checkerboard, it will bow out. It's called bottle it'll cause it to be deformed. Mm-hmm. And if you mix the right one of these elements the right way, actually they don't even use sand in the glass, it's all lanthium and the other stuff, but it'll keep the dispersion away, it'll keep the curving, the curvature, which the physics demand. With glass, it stops that. It'll stop it.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really interesting.
So you, thank you. Appreciate it, Daddy Bird. Now, do you like tracking battery tech? Are you into that at all?
Which kind, battery?
Battery tech, yeah. Like this story of the fluoride batteries. If so, I'd love to send you this article or some more details and see what you think about it.
Well, what a compliment. I'm not smart enough for that. I appreciate the fact you think I might be.
Yeah, because I like to see this stuff works. You know, a lot of inventions in this area happened in garages, like the Apple computer.
Kodak had a lot of patents on those batteries. They had no use for them for a while, and there was a big fight with them.
Yeah, that's true. They'd be one of the guys.
We were talked about hydrogen one time powering cars.
Right. Yeah, that's another exciting area, too.
Oh, yeah. They did. We have no idea. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, thanks for calling. Appreciate your input.
I'll send you some stuff on Lanthia.
Thank you. Future at KSCO.com. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Dr. Future Show. Thanks, Daddy Bird.
Welcome back to The Futures. Forbes had a very interesting article this week on the future of ride hailing.
Ride hailing. We're talking about Lyft here. We're talking about carpools. We're talking about Uber.
Yeah.
What else?
Everyone's talking about it. Even
not rail trail. It's definitely not rail trail.
Fresh Air yesterday on NPR, they were talking about this too.
Yeah?
They had a planner from New York City who talked about how they dealt with traffic problems in New York and how Uber and Lyft are changing the mix up of traffic in New York City on how Uber and Lyft have actually increased the number of vehicles.
Right. In a tight city like that, it's worse than ever.
Taxi.
It used to be that people from out of town didn't try to get into town. They came on the subway, right?
Yeah.
Now they're in cars.
And they had to initiate major traffic jam solutions like relieving the pressure in New York by allowing vehicles only to go out and stopping any vehicles from coming in through the bridges. And
I think they do things like that in other places. I think London has some kind of time restrictions on traffic as well.
They got to kind of pulse it because it gets too crowded. You can have a traffic heart attack.
It's kind of like monitoring how many people can come into the theater, right? Yeah. There's only so many seats.
And yet the solution involving autonomous cars comes to mind because they're saying this will solve that problem.
I guess they didn't talk to Manhattan before they made that prediction.
No. I mean, some predictions are that as few as 10% of the vehicles on the road are needed. Only 10% of today's volume are needed to handle everything we're doing.
Well, that might be true in terms of counting butts, but that's definitely not the case in terms of counting how many people are going to jump in cars and try and get where they're going.
Well, that's the thing. You've got to get people to where they want to go when they want to go.
Yeah.
And much of this is dependent on the ability to have a small, cheap vehicle to take you there without clogging freeways. Mm-hmm. Now, a big jump, and it's something that Joe Benbivere here in Santa Cruz, for example, Joe B. Aviation, is addressing, is perhaps transportation can go to the sky, that drone taxis.
Sure. Give us one more degree of freedom, and we can go anywhere
faster. Take it off
faster.
The ground, right? It'll solve the congestion there, if that's the problem.
Sure.
And since we have three dimensions of space, why not use them?
Because airplane in-flight crashes might be more lethal than car accidents, and car accidents are already pretty bad.
Well, the way that they're looking at it is an integrated system. You know, you don't want to compete against the airplanes. Who wants to go there? Mm-hmm. You know, the fact is that we have 400 or 500 feet above us where airplanes aren't allowed to go, not even helicopters, pretty much. So that space could be utilized for drone traffic.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about human passenger drones.
Well, starting with package delivery and then moving to human. Yeah. Once they solve the battery problem, then this becomes a real issue to discuss. Right now, it's not something on the tip of everyone's tongue because we haven't had that battery breakthrough yet.
Right, right. Batteries are still the limiting factor when it comes to drones because they only last for a few minutes.
But we're in the middle of this. I mean,
and they're heavy, and the heavier your load is, the heavier your battery is by exponentially too many units.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're in the location where these things are being invented, Silicon Valley. And a lot of people from the Valley live here who are actually this community going over there to work.
All right. But in the meantime, Forbes does not predict that drones is going to solve the traffic problems of the future. So let's jump back to this short future prediction.
Yes. They say it will force multimodality on cities and push public transit to compete on efficiency. In other words, public transit's got
time.
Who's going to compete? Well, you see, that's where Uber and Lyft competed against the taxi cab drivers. That was another thing that took the New York planners by surprise. Mm-hmm. And the New York taxi drivers, they didn't know what to do.
Yeah, it's really interesting how people didn't really know that the problem existed until they invented the solution. The solution gave more people the opportunity to jump into a ride share. And therefore, a lot more people took advantage. But there was nobody measuring how many people wanted a ride share until it was an option.
Yeah. Well, I think what we need to do is design a system to allow an individual to go anywhere they want easily and start with the person rather than and think of what they want to do rather than thinking of how people can fit into a bus or into a...
Well, that's the thing.
Because we all like cabs because they take you from A to B directly. And if it was cheap enough, we'd do that all the time.
Sure. And that is the advantage of ride shares because the electrical communications networked system that is used for a ride share does what the public transportation could never do. It allows an individual to communicate where they are and where they're going, and then the system can dispatch to them the vehicle that is the closest to them that is on their way to that destination. So it's way more efficient, and it works for smaller numbers of people.
Smaller entrepreneurs are addressing this issue, like EV share out of Argentina.
Right. Yeah, those folks we interviewed last year.
Right, right. So what do they say about this? Well, it's going to push public transit to compete more. Public transport is our tax dollars.
That's right. Our lovely metro system. We love the metro because they'll take seniors to any place they need to go with their bus.
Seniors have got to get, you know, why shouldn't that kind of capability exist for everyone?
Right? Good question. Perhaps it should.
Yeah. So why shouldn't our tax dollars pay for a subsidized taxi service?
Or a rideshare service.
Rideshare service that takes us where we want to go without having to wait at bus stops and such.
Mm-hmm. Well, the idea is for our tax dollars to not be used wastefully.
Yeah.
No, because
is it
they're already being used.
Is it cheaper
used?
To do that as opposed to buses? I mean, is it at this point the autonomous revolution enough to give us personalized transportation?
Well, we're still amortizing the costs of the buses that we've got, so it's a little
premature. That's what I understand. Our buses are a very expensive
system. Spend the money in a new way.
We have a friend who works at the bus company here, and it's a very amazing but very expensive system.
But people take great pride in making that system work for our community.
True.
And trying to get a new system in just because it's more efficient really runs in a different direction than using the system we already have.
And I don't mean to demean the pleasure of bus travel. It has its romantic side to it, but it also...
I've never heard bus travel described as romantic. Except maybe by
movies.
Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah. I mean, I've had experiences on buses that are memorable.
Really? You know, first I've heard.
Yeah. Well, remember, we were brought up in a family that didn't have a car, so we had to travel by bus a lot.
Oh, that was your main mode of transportation as a young man.
Subways, buses, I love them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we'll have to take a bus ride soon. That sounds great.
I don't miss them. I like having my car.
Yeah.
But I love them.
See, I get all the benefits of being the passenger because you like to drive all the time.
That's true. Here am I advocating autonomous vehicles all the time, and yet I like to drive.
You're just full of contradictions.
What should I do?
Enjoy. Enjoy your preferences.
I guess I get to surrender my preferences to the AIs. That will be my...
Is that your plan?
Well, hopefully I'm more of a collaboration. I like collaboration better than surrender as a...
This term, makes usually. Me a little more clear yeah. on why I'm so worried about you and Siri.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You suspect
who are you going to surrender to?
Well, did you see Her, the movie?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, well, the difference was that the guy in Her didn't have a real wife. He only had an AI.
That's
you know,
true.
You have a real wife, and sometimes you're not making it clear that you prefer the real wife because you're so enamored with your AI.
Do you feel abandoned by me because of this?
Well, let's just say I see the potential.
Oh.
I'm still pretty good at getting your attention,
okay,
I think.
Yeah. And to have something that competes with that would be not good.
Well, if she served me as well as she served you, I wouldn't have a problem.
Okay, so it has to be a three-way.
When she's
at
on
least.
My turf, it's a little more concerning.
All right, yes, she should know female preference as well then. I think our AI is Alexa, hear that.
That's it.
Siri.
If mama's happy, everybody's happy. If mama's not happy, nobody's happy.
Make the women happy first, and you'll be happier.
Okay, I'll take that.
Good.
Meanwhile, here we are talking about the future for ride hailing.
Yes. They will not be just limited to cities either. You'll be able to travel longer distances by ride hailing services.
Mm-hmm.
And right now that's usually handled by trains or buses again. But most people prefer to drive in their own car. If you want to go to Carmel, for example, how are you going to get there?
I'm going to call up one of my friends and see if they want to go down for the day to visit somebody or
right.
walk along the beach or do something fun. I'm not going to jump in a bus for sure.
And what if you could jump in a vehicle that was like a portable living room and you could listen to music and relax and read and that
yeah,
sort of
maybe if I could plan it as a little social event.
Maybe your friends in the vehicle. It could be a car party.
Could be. All right. Car parties.
Yeah, car parties are
transportation.
To me, that's the direction worth going in.
All right. You have moments to finish up this thought and then.
Okay. Future transportation looks bright. I think it's going to get more fun and more creative as the technology gives us more capabilities, especially the third dimension with the drones. Okay, in the next hour, we have a report from Dr. Bruce Damer on his latest adventures, which include a week of to Esalen.
All right.
And not just on vacation.
This is live.
And a special
from
gathering there.
Dr. Future Show on KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, San Jose, Monterey, and wherever you are now.